Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loughlin.
At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Tonight on the show, we'll talk with one of the undrafted free agents signed by the Buffalo Bills. Western New York native Jimmy Gaines joins us at 7:30. We will recap what went on in the Bills draft room last Thursday and Friday. Chris Brown will recap his On the Clock feature that appears on BuffaloBills.com. And Joe Hampton, who was Sammy Watkins' high school football freshman football coach, joins us at 8:30.
This is pandemonium.
Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson, touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The show is on the air, the John Murphy Show. Talking about the show. We're talking about the show. I don't know why. It's the show. And we're talking about Buffalo Bills football, NFL football. We want to hear from you. We want to talk about the draft, obviously. We're just a few days removed from the 2014 NFL draft. And we were introduced today face-to-face with some of those Bills draft picks. We met Sammy Watkins last Friday when he was here, but some of the others filtered through the building here today. Rookie draft picks and undrafteds will be on the field on Saturday. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, this coming weekend. But they are here today, most of them, having signed their contracts and getting into the playbook a little bit, getting into position group meetings and doing a little bit of workout, just a little light workout and conditioning work. It is on here at One Bills Tribe. The veterans remain here for the rest of this week. The veteran offseason conditioning program continues. We're not that far away. And when you get a weather day like we had today in Buffalo, what, the temperature 85 degrees? There was a point today when I'm driving around thinking, all right, training camp. It feels kind of like training camp weather, a couple of months away, just a couple of months away from training camp. It starts early this week. So we want to talk about the draft a little bit more tonight, and we want to hear from you. We do have some good guests lined up. And let me start from the bottom up. Joe Hampton is going to join us at 8:30 tonight. He was Sammy Watkins' freshman high school coach down at South Fort Myers High School. He is a legendary coach in that part of Southwest Florida. He is a member of the Florida Athletic Coaches Hall of Fame. And Joe Hampton is the guy who first called Sammy Watkins to the attention of the recruiters and assistant coaches at Clemson University. And he was there in the green room at Radio City last Thursday night when Sammy Watkins' name was called. We'll talk with legendary Southwest Florida high school coach Joe Hampton tonight at 8:30, get his take on Sammy Watkins. Chris Brown has an excellent feature. We talked about it a lot last night. It's up on BuffaloBills.com. The video feature and Chris's written companion piece On the Clock about Doug Whaley's decisiveness during the first couple of days of the draft. If you haven't seen the video, you should look at it when the show is over tonight. And read Chris's companion piece. Chris was in there throughout the draft in the Buffalo Bills draft room, and he's ready to tell us what the atmosphere was like, what the discussion was all about, and what went on inside the Bills draft room just a few days ago. Chris Brown joins us tonight at 8 o'clock. And the Bills announced that they have signed and agreed to terms with a total of 9 undrafted rookie free agents. They are part of the group that's here in One Bills Drive today. We're going to talk with one of them, who should be a familiar name to high school and some college football fans around here, Jimmy Gaines, who graduated from Canisius High School in 2010, went on to play at the University of Miami. He was a Hurricane, and now he is a Buffalo Bill, and he'll be in studio with us tonight at 7:30. He's part of the group that is making its way around One Bills Drive these days. So that's the lineup. You're part of the lineup, too. We want to hear from you, and the phone lines are open. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show and respond to us that way. The thing we want to hear from you, we've talked a lot about Sammy Watkins, and we'll talk more about Sammy Watkins tonight at 8:30. But what about the rest of the draft? What about the rest of the Bills draft? Is there one player that has you most excited about the rest of the Buffalo Bills draft? Is there one player you think is a surefire NFL, standout? I don't want to put Pro Bowl on him, but a guy who's going to make it in the league. of the other six draft picks. Second round, Cyrus Quanjo. Third round, the linebacker Preston Brown from Louisville. Fourth round, the cornerback Ross Cockrell. Fifth round, offensive lineman Cyril Richardson from Baylor. Seventh round, a couple of them, Randell Johnson from Florida Atlantic and Chantrell Henderson from Miami of Florida, offensive lineman. Of those six, who do you think will make it in the NFL? Who has the most potential to make it in the NFL? And who are you most excited about seeing on the field? Maybe you'd like to tell us which one will have the most immediate impact for the Buffalo Bills. Of the six draft picks behind Sammy Watkins, Buffalo Bills draft picks, who do you look to see the most of this year and into the future? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I kind of look at the rest of the draft, I guess, in two parts, the linemen and everybody else, the offensive linemen, three of them, three huge offensive line prospects. Cyrus Quanjo in the second round, 6'7", 322 pounds. We'll play some of his comments in a minute here. Wait till you hear what he has to say about changing the culture here at One Bills Drive. Fifth rounder, Cyril Richardson from Baylor, huge man, 6'5", 343 pounds. Seventh rounder, Chantrell Henderson, 6'7", 331 pounds. Just incredible bulk by those three. Richardson, obviously, slated to play guard. Quanjo could find himself in the starting lineup at right tackle. And Henderson, with all of his off-field issues, with all of his kind of misdirection over the last year or two, is an intriguing prospect, one that I'm sure the Bills are interested in getting in here and seeing how he turns out. So I look at those three, all of them as intriguing, and I guess if there's one of those three that I think has the potential for the most immediate impact this year, I'd go with the second rounder, Quanjo. Preston Brown, I think, will have a lot to offer this first year as a special teamer. He's the third round linebacker from Louisville. Ross Cockrell, we had a chance to talk with him today, the cornerback from Duke. He could wind up playing a little bit this year. He is the long, kind of lanky corner that many teams need. I watched video of Ross Cockrell today, some of his games, including somebody sent me the link to it, and it's outstanding. His game, the Chick-fil-A bowl game, I believe it was Chick-fil-A bowl game against Texas A&M, against Mike Evans. I thought he had some great moments in that. So those would be the ones that I'd be interested in seeing. I mean, you want to see them all, but you might have someone in mind. Which rookie beyond the first rounder do you think will have the most impact for the Bills this year? Which rookie projects to have the best career? And again, we're going after Sammy Watkins. And which rookie are you most interested in seeing? Which draft pick are you most interested in seeing beyond Sammy Watkins this upcoming year? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free from outside Buffalo, it's 1-888-550-2550. And you can reach out and follow us on Twitter as well. Or anything else that you'd like to talk about Watkins or the Buffalo Bills, let us know what you think. We are wide open here today. And a couple of tweets already. Paul Gilmore says, Team Sport John, just be winners. Okay. Nick Sam tweets in, Ross Cockrell, he is the fourth rounder, the cornerback from Duke. He's interested in seeing him. Jimmy Zelnowski tweets in, Richardson from Baylor in the fifth round will be a player. We'll see. He could be. I'm trying to look through these tweets. Alex O'Brien, you got to love the power in Quanjo and Richardson. I mean, it's hard because they are offensive linemen. It's hard to get overly excited, but I do think you can look for contributions from those two. Jean-Pierre Jobin tweets in, Cyrus Quanjo, love the way he plays. He reminds me of another Bills right tackle, a great Bills right tackle, Howard Ballard 2.0. Matt Williams tweets in, hard to get too excited about a right tackle, but if Quanjo can propel CJ and EJ to better things, then I will be delighted. Let us know what you think. You can do it via Twitter. You can do it over the phone. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. After Sammy Watkins, the Bills' first-round pick, is there one other draft pick that you're most excited about, one other draft pick that you think could have an immediate impact this season, or one other draft pick that you think projects as a long-term NFL standout? 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's go to Brian and Clarence. Hello, Brian. You're on the air.
Murph, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good. Hey, reflecting on the draft and, like, the trades, I think it's interesting, like, Doug Whaley coming out of that Pittsburgh program, very un-Steeler-like, I think, like, you know, exercising the trades, and maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's just him trying to carve out his own identity. But all things being done, giving up a first next year and a fourth, Stevie gone. We got Sammy. I don't know how much better he is than Stevie, being experienced versus a rookie. I think long-term it's good. I just like think we're probably, I don't know, five or six players, maybe more, maybe a quarterback, away from being a real contender. All things being equal, are we any better today than we were at the end of last season? Just kind of curious your thought on that.
Yeah, I think so. I think Sammy Watkins far and away makes him a better team. I have all the respect in the world for Stevie Johnson and his record of production here, but Sammy Watkins is right now, I think, a better player than Stevie Johnson right now. And I think projects to be a much better player down the road. So, yeah, I think they're better there. I think the offensive line is going to be better with the addition of Kwanjo, with the addition of Chris Williams. I think Brandon Spikes is going to do great things to shore up the run defense and move Kiko outside, where he probably will make as many, if not more, plays in the second year. So if you're asking me, are the Bills a better team than they were at the end of 2013 season? Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's much doubt about that. And you don't think so, Brian? Is that it?
No, I guess you're closer to this than I'll ever be. And I just, you know, that's the thing. Like, you look at, like, where did we end up? How close are we? And did we inch closer to the red zone? Like, are we better than we were at the end of last year? And if the answer is yes, and it shows up on the field, then you got to believe that the decision-making going on in the draft room is heading us in the right direction. So
yeah, well, I mean, that's the.
I'm deferring to you,
and I don't know either. We're all guessing, and that's the measure too, right? That's the measure of how those decisions, all the decisions that have been, talked about and debated over the last 4 days, 5 days since day one of the draft last Thursday, all the decisions and all the drama that is highlighted on our piece, our video piece, Bill's Focus piece inside the draft room. I mean, it's great drama. It's exciting to see that kind of real-life drama take place, and we'll talk about it with Chris Brown. But I think if you're saying, Brian, that doesn't mean anything, if it doesn't translate into wins, you're absolutely right. It doesn't mean anything. It can look great in May when the draft comes around, or free agency. It can look good in March, but you got to win. And I think, yeah, you mentioned an earlier point that you made, Brian, about Doug Whaley coming out of the Steelers mode, and he does bring a lot of, I think, great experience from the Pittsburgh Steelers, working with Kevin Colbert and some of the other scouts and personnel people he worked with there. But he's in a different situation here. This has been a long, pronounced playoff drought. And he's had to make moves and push buttons and take risks that the Steelers probably never would, primarily because the Steelers have a franchise quarterback. They believe that they might have that quarterback here in A.J. Manuel. They're not sure. They have spent the bulk of this offseason trying to get better around E.J. Manuel. But, you know, when you have a Ben Roethlisberger who's already won a Super Bowl, when you have the long-standing history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, you might not have to take the kind of risks that the Bills have taken this past week and in the last year of Doug Whaley's tenure. Phone lines are open. Anything you'd like to talk about, we'd like to hear your thoughts on the Bills draft class aside from Sammy Watkins. To focus the attention on some of the guys down the line a little bit, phone lines are open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Greg in Iowa is on the line. Hi, Greg.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Doing great.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
I sure can. You got phones out there in Iowa?
I'm on a headset. I'm driving a truck right now.
Okay.
It's what I do. I'm from, I've lived in Silver Creek. I grew up in Eden, but anyway, I just got a little bit of a story.
Yeah.
It was actually the evening of the 7th. I got into a truck stop, and they went to the driver's lounge, and there was just one other gentleman in there. We were flipping around the channels. I wanted to make sure I had the right channel for the draft on for the next day. And turns out this guy is Sammy Watkins' uncle.
No kidding.
And, yeah, and this is way before, obviously, the trade, you know, with Cleveland and all that kind of thing. And I remember listening to your show, and I looked into Sammy after hearing what you had to say about him, and I was pretty impressed and really hoping that they somehow found a way to get him. And lo and behold, let me back up a little bit. I had the guy text me a picture of a family where Sammy is standing off on the left-hand side. And sure enough, it's Sammy Watkins. And the next day when they did the trade, it just blew my mind. It was just kind of strange that all that kind of fell into place. And it's pretty cool. But anyway, as far as the other players, I'm really hoping that this offensive line and the guys that they drafted live up to and are as big as their actual size. I hope they offer a lot of protection for EJ this year. And,
yeah.
I guess I'll hang up and listen to what you got to say, John.
All good right.
Chatting with you.
Thanks. Good talking with you, Greg. Thanks for calling. Great story about Sammy Watkins meeting his uncle at a truck stop. You know what? This thought occurred to me, and it happened last Thursday. I thought about this way back at the combine, third week of February. We're in the media room at the combine, and the players come through and they stand at the podium. And obviously, Sammy Watkins got a lot of attention. I think that would have been Saturday of the combine. And I took a picture from the side of the podium and tweeted it out. And I remember doing this, and somebody actually retweeted this the other day. This is way back at, I think it was February 22nd. And the tweet I put out said, Sammy Watkins, as the late John Butler used to say, wouldn't this guy look good with one of those buffaloes on the side of his helmet? John Butler, the former Bills GM, used to say that all the time around draft time. Like, how'd you like to see that guy running around with one of those buffaloes on the side of his head? I mean, and I looked at Sammy Watkins, thought the same thing way back at the combine, never imagining that they'd be in position to get him. I mean, never imagining that they could move up that far. And it was only last week, last Monday, maybe the week before, persistent. I remember saying this on the air probably a week ago tonight, persistent reports about the Bills trying to move up. Doug Whaley talks about it. In fact, we'll talk with Chris Brown about it when he joins us at 8 o'clock. Post-draft, Doug Whaley talked about it, how eager they were, how many calls they made in an effort to move up in the draft. There were persistent reports about that, and we finally, by like this time or maybe last Wednesday, boiled it down and said, well, it has to be Watkins they're going after. I never figured they would do it, pull the trigger, send a first-rounder. They did, and there he is. He's a Buffalo Bill, Sammy Watkins. Pretty amazing. But, yeah, it's interesting to think. I don't know how many of us a week ago, let alone 2 months ago, would have said the Bills would wind up with Sammy Watkins in this draft. Just a bold move. I don't know how many of us would say, yeah, the Bills will trade their first rounder to go get Sammy Watkins in this draft. Pretty amazing. Phone line's open. Give us your call. 803-0550 is the number. Let's go to Sean in Dallas. Hello, Sean. You're on the air.
Hey, Johnny. What's up, man?
Not much, Shawnee. How are you?
Hey, I enjoyed the draft. You know, I look at all the prospects. I really think the Bills did a good job. I can't really complain about anybody. I can't complain about the trade to get Sammy Watkins. I think Sammy Watkins was a great pickup. And, I mean, he's definitely an elite receiver. But I was watching some of that video on Cyril Richardson. That dude's a beast. I'm watching him. That guy's knocking everybody off the ball. I didn't see him get beat once. I watched two games of him on that NFL draft or prospect. You mentioned that website. I can't remember which one
it
is.
Yeah, Draft Breakdown, yeah.
Draft Breakdown. He didn't get beat one time. I know Joe Biscaglia is, you know, a little bit down on him. Then his footwork needs some work. But, man, he can destroy people. I'm looking forward to seeing him. I think he steps in right away and helps the team out.
No, the great thing is he doesn't necessarily have to step in right away, Sean, because I think, you know, they have some pretty decent guards with Chris Williams and Craig Erbick and, you know, Ligurski will be back, and so there'll be some competition there. He doesn't have to step in right away, but he's got size. I mean, you know, just size that may put him at the head of the class there, especially compared to some of the guys who've been here for a while. So, yeah, he might not have to step in right away. He may get a little break-in period as a fifth-rounder and work on some of the aspects of his game that people poke holes in. Mel Kiper, in a draft conference call yesterday, had some thoughts on Cyril Richardson, who was the Bills' fifth-round draft pick, the guard out of Baylor University.
You have to go back and coach him up, and he had a pretty good career. It's just, getting him to where he was, and he didn't go through the process, whether you talk the All-Star game, talk about combine workout and all that, to go any higher in the fifth round. At one point, we thought it'd be a second-round pick, third-round pick. Kid has ability. I think he can help Buffalo win the offensive line at guard. Quanjo's a question mark, you know, because he had a subpar year, and he has the injury concern. But with those two kids, and Henderson, if he stays focused on the job at hand, they're all roll of the dice. But Richardson, of the three, was the one that you give the best chance to, and with Quanjo right in there. So I wouldn't count Richardson out from being a starting guard in the NFL. He's shown that kind of ability at Baylor.
That's Mel Kiper Jr. talking mostly about Cyril Richardson. The one thing I think that hurt Richardson, and Kiper referenced it, he struggled in the Senior Bowl, struggled badly when Aaron Donald lit everybody up during the Senior Bowl practices, and that stuck with people. And that's probably why, as Kiper said, he slid down from a potential second rounder to the fifth rounder where the Bills got him. Gary from Maryland is on the air. Hello, Gary. Welcome.
How's it going, John?
Okay.
I wanted to talk about, I think the Bills in this draft, a great draft in my point of view. I think the real focus here was their upgrade to the offensive line. You got Guanjo, you got Richardson, and I think a really undervalued pick is actually Central Henderson, who we picked up in the seventh round. He's very big. He's 6'7", 330. He's very athletic, and though the scouting report on him was that maybe he wasn't so motivated as other prospects, and eventually he was actually he was projected to go first round, but this lack of motivation dropped him to the seventh round. I think what Marone's got in place in Buffalo as a shelter for players who've been dejected, for players who've been rejected by other teams, I think we can, as a team, drill into Henderson that he has potential and that he has one shot. And I think if we do this, then which we have done in the past, I think we can really get the most out of this guy.
Yeah, you're right. Chantrell Henderson, the most highly recruited offensive line prospect coming out of Minnesota when he went to Miami of Florida. Just some troubles down there. You mentioned the motivation issue. And the Bills know what they have. They know that it's a risk. They also know that he's a seventh rounder. And seventh rounders don't make rosters all the time in the NFL. So they know what they're dealing with there. And the physical ability and the athletic ability, along with the size, I should say the size and the athletic ability, are what set him apart and make him, I think, a risk worth taking at this point. Frank in Amherst. Hello, Frank. Welcome.
Hey, John, you know, I'm beginning to be excited about Watkins. I mean, at first I wasn't too thrilled, but, you know, the more and more I read about him, I feel like we got sort of a Marshawn Lynch in a wide receiver position with more speed. And, you know, I'm quite excited about. But one thing that, you know, I'm a little worried about is Spiller. I feel like, you know, it's purely speculation on my part, but I got a feeling that, you know, they were shopping him maybe in order to move up to get Watkins. And maybe, you know, that's how, you know, maybe later on they had to give up the number one pick next year in order to get him. But I feel like, you know, with Spiller and Watkins, we have a chance to have a real dynamic duo, maybe two of the best players in the league. And I really wish that the offensive staff can use them in the correct way because, you know, the best part of the coaching staff is in Cleveland right now because, you know, Patton and the crew. And I feel like it's really a prove it time for the offensive coordinator and Marone, too.
And the quarterback, too, I think, Frank. Yeah, thanks very much. The quarterback going into his second year, they all got to prove it. And, yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's I think the central focus of the season is the development of E.J. Manuel. The Bills announced today that they've signed seven undrafted free agents. They've agreed to terms with two others they have yet to sign. Among the list of names, defensive tackle Damian Jacobs out of Florida, 6'3", 290-pound defensive tackle, who started four games for the Gators after transferring from a community college in Mississippi. They signed linebacker Brian Johnson from West Texas A&M, 6'4", 250-pounder, played in 28 games with 10 starts there. They signed linebacker Darren Kitchens from Florida, 6'2", 230-pounder. He won the Florida Leadership Award and the Community Service Award. They signed a safety from Vanderbilt, Kenny Ladler, 6'1", 207 pounds, 39 starts for the Commodores. They signed a cornerback, Darius Robinson of Clemson, 5'10", 175-pounder. They signed Dion Broomfeld, a safety from Iowa State, 6-footer, 206 pounds. They agreed to terms with two other players, one from University at Buffalo, Derek Brim, 6 foot safety, 199 pounds, who played in all 13 games during his senior year at UB. They also signed a defensive lineman from UB, or agreed to terms, rather, with Colby Way. Defensive lineman, 6'4", 293 pounds. And they signed a Buffalo native, Jimmy Gaines, a linebacker from the University of Miami. He is from Gettysville, New York, Amherst area. He played at Canisius High School, and then he played for the Hurricanes of Miami. And he signed a free agent contract with the Bills today. We're going to take a break and come back and hear from him. Jimmy Gaines is going to join us in studio when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We are live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Rookies in the building all this week. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. They've got the Bills have the draft picks and the undrafted free agents, including the guy who joins us in the studio right now. He is a native of Western New York, James Gaines. Jimmy Gaines, I can call you Jimmy, you said, right?
Yes, sir.
What's it like to be with your hometown team, the Buffalo Bills?
It's amazing. You know, it's amazing. I was well received from people from back home, you know, after leaving to go to the University of Miami and having the opportunity to play there and just to be back home is wonderful.
Did you follow the Bills growing up? Were you a Bills fan as a youngster?
Yes, I was a Bills fan. I grew up watching the Bills. I had other teams I watched, but I mean, they were right in my backyard.
Sure.
So.
And definitely. You grew up, you went to, tell me about your high school career. You started at Waynesville North?
Yes, I started at Waynesville North my freshman and sophomore year. And then I transferred to Canisius High School my junior and senior year.
And how did that go for you? Obviously, you did a lot of winning in your years at Canisius, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a change coming from Waynesville North. We weren't very good at that time. I heard they're pretty good now.
Yeah.
But we didn't do a lot of winning, so I felt like I had a better opportunity to accomplish my dreams, you know, if I went to Canisius and not ended up doing that.
We talked about some of the mutual acquaintances we have. Canisius is kind of a tight-knit community. You probably have heard from some of the Canisius people since you've signed here at Buffalo.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Through Facebook, text message, those guys. I'm still in contact with those guys. So it's always great. You know, it's a family over there at Canisius, so it's great talking to those guys.
Thanks to guys like you and several others, Canisius has become really kind of the preeminent high school football program here in Western New York, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, it was amazing. I heard before I got there, it wasn't very good, and then you know things I heard about it, and I had to go all aboard with it.
Yeah, what positions did you play at Canisius High School?
Oh,
I played everything.
A little bit of everything: running back, fullback, tight end, receiver, linebacker, safety. I mean, whatever I was asked to play, I played it.
And Jimmy, how did you make your way to University of Miami? Did they recruit you out of Canisius High School?
Yes, they did. I was originally committed to University of Buffalo.
Okay.
And with Turner Gill, and Turner Gill left that year I was coming out, and I decommitted from Buffalo, and I got a few offers, and Miami happened to be one of them, and I couldn't say no.
Yeah, I mean, was that like the biggest school that that was showing any interest in you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That was the top school. I mean, there are other schools. Oklahoma and Arkansas at the same time, but I was sold on the U.
Yeah. Why did you commit to UB at first? Because of Turner Gill? Did something about Coach Gill?
Yeah, the staff was amazing. You know, I really connected with the staff really well, and I just went. I wouldn't have minded being home. You know, it was fun for me. I knew a lot of the guys on the team as well. So, I mean, I had the opportunity, but you know, I decided to go down to South Florida.
Did they recruit you as a linebacker at University of Miami?
No, at Miami, yes.
Yeah. What about UB?
Everywhere else, I was going to play safety.
Yeah. Yeah. You're kind of in that kind of tweener mode, aren't you?
Yeah, I was, but I'm pretty much sold on linebacker now. I've been playing it for the last 4 years. I'm really familiar with it now, so and comfortable with it too.
We're in studio with Jimmy Gaines, Bills linebacker, one of the free agent signees by the Buffalo Bills. What did Miami see of you that made them think that you belonged at the linebacker spot? Do you think?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure how they found me. I feel like I was. Just one of those guys. I was a two-star athlete coming out, you know. I was a two-star. I didn't really have much going. You know, I had a few things, but I didn't have too much. But they found me, Coach Michael Barrow and Randy Shannon at the time, and Coach Lovett, the defensive coordinator at the time. They found me, and they flew up to Buffalo to see if I was what they thought I was, and I happened to be that way, and they offered me on my recruiting visit.
You started 27 games in 41 career games played for the Hurricanes. When did you become a starter? In your third year down there, or when did you start really being a regular guy in the lineup?
Well, my sophomore year, I earned the job, and then I wasn't really ready for it. You know, I ended up losing my job, I think after the seventh or eighth game. And then my junior year, I was starting again, and then I got hurt in the spring. I had to get surgery, but
what kind of surgery?
Ankle surgery. Okay. So I had to do that, and so that held me back for the first half of the season. Then I started the last half of the season, and then my senior year, I started all the games.
And tell me about your senior year. I mean, overall, you had some pretty good numbers there. Three fumble recoveries, two interceptions. A pretty good senior year, I think, for the University of Miami.
Huh? Yeah, it was pretty successful. You know, I had the opportunity to be healthy that whole year, and I'm just a lot smarter and a lot more football savvy, and being able to play the position, you know, instead of it coming from high school, I didn't really play linebacker too much, so my sophomore year was pretty much my second year playing linebacker. So senior year, I got it. I understood it.
And at the end of the year, did you go to any all-star games or workout combine type workouts, regional combines, anything like that?
I went to an all-star game in South Carolina called the College All-Star Bowl.
Okay.
And then I had my pro day, and then I worked out for the Miami Dolphins, and had some calls too from some other teams, and I happened to be, and now I'm here. You know?
Tell me about that All-Star game in South Carolina. How did you do that? Was it a week's worth of practice and then a game at the end of the week?
Yes, it was a week's worth of practice, and a lot of NFL teams were at the were there and then watched us practice and watched the game too, and I played pretty well.
When did you get contact, or when did you have contact with the Buffalo Bills? Did they call you? Did they come to your pro day? Anything?
They were at my pro day, but I didn't speak to them. They didn't speak to me, and I did whatever I could for my pro day, and then, you know, I think my agent talked to where it was in contact with the Bill just a little, briefly. It wasn't too much, and then draft day comes in. I get the call.
Did you expect to get drafted? Were you sitting there on Saturday thinking I might get a call here?
I was always told late round free agent guy. So I mean, when the draft ended, I wasn't too hurt by it. I mean, I understood what was happening. You know, I wasn't surprised, and I just wanted the opportunity to be able to work.
And when the draft ended, your phone probably started ringing off the hook, or what, did your agent's phone ring off the hook?
Both.
Were you in Miami or up here in Buffalo?
I was in Miami moving all my things. I just graduated, so yeah. I just move all my things to back up to here to Buffalo to my parents' house. So it was amazing.
And what how many calls did you get?
Let's see, about
dozens. I mean,
well, I wouldn't say dozens. I got about four or five. Okay. and then my agent got, you know, a few himself, and then, you know, we compiled it, and we chose which one was the best decision for me.
Why was Buffalo the best for you?
Buffalo was the best for me not only because it was home, but because, you know, the system that I like, the system that they have, the defense that they have coming in, you know, and the linebacker situation. I feel like I have a chance to compete for a job. You know, I come here to compete. Free agent or drafted. I mean, that's what I'm here to do.
How much of a factor was the hometown thing? Was it when you got the call and they said Buffalo, was that like immediately at the front of your list of places where you might want to sign?
Not necessarily. You know, I wasn't just looking at the location. I was looking at the whole thing, the whole big picture with it, because I wanted to make the best situation for myself. I didn't want to just come into a situation where I didn't have any chance to succeed. So, I mean, Buffalo was the best decision that I made so I could succeed.
We're with Jimmy Gaines, Bills linebacker and undrafted free agent signed to the roster this week. Jimmy, tell me about coming up here the last couple of days. What's it been like for you since you've come back home and been around the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. Yeah. I mean, we were going here and there, you know, getting set up in our apartments and getting our physicals done and having a quick workout and just going through the meetings as well, the special teams and the defensive meeting and the position meetings. I mean, it's, you know, it started at six, you know, six in this morning. So, I mean, it's. We've been running around a lot, you know, but this is what it is. It's my job now, so I have no problem with it. I love it.
People always talk about that for guys coming out of college, how there is no end. I mean, imagine you had your all-star game, you had your pro days, you were working out all the time, and here you are. And if you make the roster, you're going to be here doing this for until the end of the year, essentially. That's a long grind, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But it's worth it. You know, I love the game. So, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way, you know, just to play a sport that I love, play a game that I love. It's a child's game. You know, I'm just happy to have the opportunity.
What about this defense do you like, and what role do you think they might have in mind for you in this Bills defense this year?
this defense, it's a 4-3 defense. You know, I'll probably play on the outside linebacker, probably the will position. That's what I was leaning towards. That's what I was thinking, you know. But I like it. You know, it's an aggressive defense. You know, and they get after it, you know, and I believe that our coaches that know exactly what ways to exploit the offenses that they go about doing it. So, I mean, just watching because he came from the Detroit Lions, so I was just able to just to watch them and how they did. I mean, I'm excited.
As a will linebacker, they'll probably have you rush the passer, I would think, right?
I could do whatever they ask me to.
Yeah, that's some fun there, right?
Yeah, oh, definitely, definitely.
What about dropping into coverage? Are you comfortable running around back in coverage?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, my prior experience of playing safety in high school, I mean, that's definitely there.
Just sitting across the desk from me, you look like you got a big wingspan, that you could cover, you know, a lot of territory back there in coverage. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I could do what I can. You know, I do what I can and whenever it's asked of.
This Friday, Saturday, you guys are on the field. Saturday, Sunday, Monday for the rookie minicamp. What do you think that'll be like? It'll be a little bit, I would think, a little bit more intense than what you're doing leading up to Saturday here, huh?
Right. It's definitely going to be a little bit more intense, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I don't really know what to expect other than the fact that it's going to be more intense. So I'm excited. You know, I'm excited. I'm enjoying the whole journey, really.
What do your parents think about you being up here?
They're so happy.
Yeah,
they're definitely happy there that I'm back home, and my family is what my family members that are still here too. They're excited.
It's gonna be fun. Thanks for doing this with us.
Oh, no problem.
We appreciate it. Jimmy Gaines, Bills linebacker, signed from the University of Miami, one of the undrafted free agents signed this week by the Buffalo Bills. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It's good talking with Jimmy Gaines. I like him. Going to root for him. We'll see. He's a Canisius High School product. He is a University of Miami Hurricane, and now he is a Buffalo Bill linebacker, Jimmy Gaines. Thanks to him for joining us tonight. Hey, we're still open for questions. We got time here, a couple of minutes here to the top of the hour. If you have thoughts on who besides Sammy Watkins you're most excited at seeing in the Bills draft class, who do you think is going to have the best NFL career, again, after Sammy Watkins? Who's going to make the most immediate impact this year? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. You can do it on Twitter, at John Murphy Show. We've had a couple of tweets already that respond to that. People like the offensive linemen. You can tell that. Kevin Keller tweets in Cyril Richardson. Tim Bain tweets in, I love Sammy Watkins, but I think Cyril will make an instant impact. He's a big man who can play fast. So let us know what you think. Give us a call if you'd like. Hey, if you haven't done so already and you got a tablet at home, you may want to download the Bills Touch app for your iPad, for a Windows or Android tablet. The Bills released a draft preview issue, which is still up there. You can get a good look at some of these draft prospects on the Buffalo Bills Touch app. It's Bills Touch, actually, is the name of the app. It's loaded with all kinds of great interactivity, including draft prospect videos, an in-depth look at Bills draft history, mock draft summaries, a live draft board. It's all right there at the Bills Touch app. There's also a stadium renovation guide in the interactive video tour, behind-the-scenes video of what the stadium's going to look like, along with photo galleries updated regularly and much more. Download Buffalo Bills Touch for free. You can get it at the Apple iTunes Store, at the Windows App Store, and in Google Play Store, and tap into an essential tool for Bills fans that brings you closer to your team than ever before, the Bills Touch app. You can get it at the Apple iTunes Store, the Windows App Store, and the Google Play Store. A couple of other notes from the Bills today to make room for those nine rookies we announced that they've signed. They released a reserve offensive lineman today. Offensive lineman Jamal Johnson-Webb, product of Alabama A&M, an undrafted free agent, went to the Cardinals last year, then was released before the regular season. He spent practice squad time with the Bears and Vikings last year. He was released today by the Buffalo Bills. And news from a candidate from Toronto today that Aaron Maben has retired at age 26. The former Bills first-round draft pick, 2009, 11th overall pick, Aaron Maben, who went on to play with the Jets and the Cincinnati Bengals. One start in two seasons for the Bills for Aaron Maben, the 2009 first-round draft pick. Never got a sack, and then the team let him go in 2011. Had some success with Rex Ryan and the Jets in 2011, had six sacks as a situational rusher, but he was released about halfway through the 2012 season. Aaron Maben announcing his retirement today at age 26. Pretty amazing. Really amazing, actually, when you think about it. All right, let's set you up for next hour. What's coming up next hour? Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com, the Bills insider, and he was inside the Buffalo Bills draft room all last weekend. He's got the story of what went on there, the trade for Sammy Watkins, the trade for Bryce Brown, the maneuvering that resulted in Buffalo moving up and down the draft a little bit. You can read about it at BuffaloBills.com. You can see the video at Bills Focus, amazing draft room video that only we have. And we're going to talk with Chris Brown about all of that when we return for Hour 2. Also in the second hour, we'll talk more about Sammy Watkins with his freshman high school football coach, Joe Hampton. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone.
Time is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show. We're here till 9 o'clock tonight. We're going to talk about Sammy Watkins at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk with his freshman high school football coach. He was at the in the draft room at Radio City with him. He'll be with us coming up tonight at 8:30, Joe Hampton. The draft, we're still talking about it because it was big, obviously, and it was dramatic. As far as the Buffalo Bills are concerned, a lot of that drama is on display for you right now on our website, BuffaloBills.com. If you go to the Bills Focus Story, it's been up about 24 hours. The Bills Draft Room exclusive video is there. An accompanying piece, website story written by Bills insider Chris Brown, on the clock, Whaley's decisive deal-making. Chris Brown, the fourth and final installment of his On the Clock series, and he was there in the draft room while the Buffalo Bills went through their maneuvering for the NFL draft. And Chris Brown, Bills insider, is on the line with us live right now. Chris, thanks very much for coming on with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Murph.
Yeah, you don't sound convinced. I mean, we love these On the Clock features. This is the fourth of four of them. They've all been outstanding, Chris. Really great work and great in-depth stuff that you can't really get anywhere else.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. We did put a lot of extra work in. You even helped me out with a couple of interviews when you were down at the owners' meetings talking to Rick Spielman. So we really did try to canvas the NFL and not just necessarily one Bills drive, as we usually do, just to kind of broaden the perspective a little bit with some of these stories we covered. But, yeah, this last one was all Bills. And, you know, we had the fortunate seat in the draft room where we could really kind of witness everything and really play that fly on the wall role. And I mean, we were pretty eager to get in there, especially with all the pre-draft talk about the Bills' seeming willingness to move up in the draft to try to get one of the elite prospects in round one.
Yeah, this last one was all Bills, and this last one was all access, Chris. And I know you've been in the draft room before for other drafts, but have you ever been in there in a more dramatic setting as far as what the Bills were trying to do on the first day of the draft?
I was in there in 2004 when Tom Donahoe traded back into the bottom of the first round to get J.P. Lossman. I remember that one pretty vividly because we had just finished the press conference after they took Lee Evans 13th overall, if I remember right, and so I'm wrapping up with that press conference. I'm making my way back to the draft room, and I walk in, and I think every telephone is being used in there. John Guy, who was the director of pro personnel at the time, he was in charge of being the point man and calling other teams, and he was basically calling them one after another at 19, 20, 21, and then finally at 22, he was able to swing a deal with Dallas, and then they moved up to 22nd, but it was pretty harried in there during that period of time. I wouldn't say there was as much commotion for this. It seemed like they had kind of mapped it out. And I suppose when there are only three picks ahead of where you want to get, maybe it's an easier roadmap to follow. And they had conversations with Cleveland GM Ray Farmer, and you know, as we saw in our Bills Focus video feature, it got a little hairy at the end, but they made it work.
Chris Brown is on the line with us, Bills Insider. His on-the-clock feature, Whaley's decisive deal-making with the video to support it. Bills focus about what the draft room was like on Thursday and Friday. Well, you mentioned Doug Whaley and how it wasn't that crazy in the draft room. Chris, a lot of us didn't know what to expect from Doug Whaley. This was his first draft as a general manager, but from the look of it on the video and the sound of it from what you write, it sounds like Doug Whaley was very even-keeled and, as you point out, very decisive. He wasn't hemming and hawing about some of the stuff that was going on in there.
I was the thing that really struck me just observing him for 3 days in the GM's chair. There was never a moment in time, whether time was ticking, and it literally was with the Cleveland deal, or any deal on day two or day three. When he was presented with an offer, it would take him all of about 2 or 3 seconds to either reject it, say, that doesn't sound too bad, but let me call you back, or, yeah, we'll do that. He was open for business, as he said, and he meant it. And it wasn't until after the draft when I had an opportunity to sit down with him and really kind of fill in all of the blanks that maybe I was not within earshot of from my vantage point in the draft room, because they've got the TV up loud in there with the ESPN coverage, so sometimes you can't hear all the conversations at the head table. But I found out why it's so easy for him to be so decisive. When he was in Pittsburgh working in the personnel department there, he was operating the trade phone. It was his job to get in contact with the other teams with their offers for trades and to hear their offers in return or their counteroffers. And I would think after 11 years of doing that, if you don't have the trade value chart memorized or know what is an equitable deal off the top of your head, you're never going to know it. I think he used those 11 years, he put them to good use, because it's certainly helping him now. And I think it's one of the main reasons why he was as decisive as he was in his first year as the trigger man.
Live on the line with Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. If you have a comment or a question for Chris, lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris was in the draft room when the Bills made their maneuvers on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this past weekend. So if you have any questions about that, you can give us a call. Well, Chris, let's start with the trade up to get Sammy Watkins. We talked about this, I think you were on the show like a week ago, 6 days ago at least. There were so the reports that Buffalo was trying to trade up were so persistent, it could not have been a surprise that they went into that with some of the groundwork already laid when it came to making a move up into the draft, huh?
Yeah, they did find out pretty quickly that Houston was committed to their pick at one, because they did call them to see what it would take to get up there. And Houston had pretty much resigned themselves to the fact that they were going to take Clowney because no offers were going to be good enough to justify swapping out at one. So, you know, that was off the table pretty quickly early in the day on draft day. And then, you know, pick two, they kind of had an idea as to what was going to happen there with St. Louis. They did talk to them. As you know, Les Snead is probably one of the biggest wheeler dealers in the league and is not afraid to move up and down the board at a moment's notice, but they were pretty committed to a player that they had in mind, and most people suspected it was Robinson, the offensive tackle. And the real unknown was Jacksonville at three. And Doug Whaley had assigned Russ Brandon to try to work some intel there with David Caldwell, who he knows pretty well, to try to get a feeling. But as Jim Mona said in our video package, they never let on, never tipped who they were leaning towards. And so that really kind of became, you know, the big question mark, and it's where the draft really pivoted, because Clowney goes first, Robinson goes second, Sammy Watkins is still on the board here, but there was certainly a distinct possibility that Jacksonville could take the receiver, knowing that the receiver they took just a couple of years ago was probably not going to be playing this year. Whose name's escaping me now, the kid from Oklahoma State.
Justin Blackmon.
Justin Blackmon, thank you. So, you know, there was certainly a chance they could take Watkins there at three, but once they took Blake Bortles, there were smiles at the head table, and Doug Whaley was on the phone in about 3 seconds after Kevin Megank, you know, relayed what they were telling him from the table in New York. You know, Sean Gibson shouted down the phone line and said, Jacksonville sending in the pick, and it's Blake Bortles. So he was on the phone right away calling Cleveland, and, you know, then it was calls back and forth. But, I mean, as soon as the Bortles pick's made, the clock's running.
Yep.
And there's only 10 minutes, and there were a lot of back and forth and counter offers going on there. And it got a little squirrely there at the end.
Well, and actually, and it's pointed out in the video, and you documented in your story, the Browns actually said to, I guess said to Doug Whaley, we'll get back to you in a minute, which kind of derailed everything for a few seconds anyway.
Right, and the reason why was because they were getting another call, and I talked to Doug about that. I said, how long do those 30 seconds feel when you hear the GM on the other end of the line, who you've been negotiating with probably for the better part of a week, and now you've got the terms pretty much set, and he says, hold on, I got another call, I'll call you back in 30 seconds. He said it felt like 30 minutes. But actually, Farmer called back in less than 30 seconds. It was probably in 15 seconds he was back on the line. They both went over the terms, and then they sent it in, because by the time they called back, they were already down to about 6.5 minutes on the clock. So now Jim Oberdorf's got to call the league with the trade terms, get them approved. Rob Hanrahan's got to send him in electronically on email, and then they've got to get Sammy Watkins on the phone, make sure he didn't break his leg the night before or get arrested or anything else. So he calls Sammy Watkins, and as soon as they found out he was okay and he was healthy, you know, they sent the pick in probably with about 4.5 minutes left.
Wow. Chris Brown is on the line with us, Bills insider at BuffaloBills.com, and he was in the draft room over the weekend with the Bills. You can see the video. It's up right now, the Bills Focus video piece and Chris's piece on the clock, Whaley's decisive deal-making. Well, on Friday, the offer was there for the Bills to move around, and it started right away, it appears, on Friday night in the second round, Chris, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, they saw Bishop Sankey go to Tennessee down there in the bottom half of the second round, and to that point, no running back had been taken. And the Bills admitted they were in the market to add a young running back, and so they wanted to get in on the action, figuring the run was going to start right there. And so Jim Oberdorf got on the line, and he was starting to call every team after that Tennessee pick, trying to trade back up into the bottom of the second round. And they had initially offered their 3 and their 5, and then they upped the ante to a 3 and a 4, which was more in line with the proper value, at least on the trade value chart. Unfortunately, the next pick was Jeremy Hill, so he was off the board. And then another team, I can't remember who, had traded right up into that area to take a wide receiver. I want to say it was Denver. They swapped out with San Francisco. Denver took Cody Latimer there.
Yep.
So they were trying desperately to make a trade with Miami, but Miami did not want to trade out of the round. You know, and the Bills were offering a 3 and a 4, but they didn't want to trade out of the second round completely. They wanted to get just lower in the second round. And the only team that was able to offer them that was San Francisco. And so San Francisco offered their second-round pick at 61 along with something else, and that was agreeable to the Dolphins. They only had to slide back 4 picks and pick up an extra selection and stay in the round. And that was really the deal that made the most sense to Miami. And Doug Whaley even called Miami back and said, hey, why'd you do the deal with them? I mean, he had an idea why, but he wanted to hear it from Miami. And the GM there, Hickey, had said, look, we wanted to stay in round 2. San Francisco could offer us that, so that's why we took the deal with them. And, you know, Whaley wasn't sore about it or anything. It made sense to him also. But that was an example of the Bills still trying to be active even when it didn't work out. They were still trying. So they wanted Carlos Hyde and admitted as much, but San Francisco is the team that ended up with him.
And speaking of trades, there are a couple others I want to ask you about. This one did not, I don't think, occurred in the draft room, but the Stevie Johnson deal with San Francisco, sounds like the groundwork for that had been laid fairly early before the draft, I guess, right?
Yeah, about a week or so before, you know, the pro personnel department just told people they were open for business. If you're interested in any players on our roster, let us know. You know, we'll talk to you about anything if we feel it's a benefit for our team as well. And Doug Whaley was adamant about that. He said nobody was mentioned specifically. We just left the door open for teams to come to us if they were interested in any particular players. So San Francisco called Friday morning, and, you know, Trent Baalke pretty much told Doug Whaley, hey, we're interested in Stevie Johnson. What might it take to get something done to get him off your roster? And so they had talked back and forth, and as Doug described it to me, after they had a couple of, probably about half a dozen initial phone calls, the call where it got down to the nitty-gritty, they talked probably for the better part of an hour and a half on and off, trying to cement the terms that they felt were equitable for both sides. And, you know, they end up getting that conditional pick. San Francisco gets Stevie Johnson, and really, I think this is going to give an opportunity to Robert Woods to really flourish in that slot role.
And then finally, the Saturday deal, which was, what, a year in the making for running back Bryce Brown and the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, that was that one took a really long time. They estimated it was about a year and a half in the making. It was almost since the time that the Eagles had gotten Bryce Brown on their roster, not long after. They just had a crowded backfield. I think they knew that Bryce Brown really didn't have a long-term future where he was going to get a ton of opportunities in Philadelphia with LeSean McCoy there, and that was only exacerbated by their offseason addition of Darren Sproles. So I think they had a young player with low mileage that they felt they could get a good return on, and certainly he was attractive to the Bills, especially after they lost out on the running back run. So it was a situation where, you know, they tried to talk with them, but Doug Whaley was a little dismayed by how things were going, and it got to a point where he just put the trade opportunity out of his mind. And then Friday, you know, Russ Brandon, he kind of delegated it to him. He said, look, I got to focus on day three of the draft coming up here. If you can make something happen, more power to you. Take it and run with it. I got to focus on day three. And so Russ really kind of worked things out with Howie Roseman, and eventually they came to terms and swung the trade. And, you know, after a year and a half, they finally got their hands on Bryce Brown, who they think a lot of. At 6'2", 223, I mean, he's got speed to burn, but he can run between the tackles.
Hey, Chris, it sounds like, from your observation anyway, it sounds like everyone had a role to play in that draft room for the Bills, even Russ Brandon and Jim Overdorff. Everybody had, like, an assigned role to play in there.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Overdorff kind of works the trade phone. You know, Doug Majewski gets players on the phone line. You even have, you know, a guy like Rob Hanrahan in the pro scouting department. He was handling all the trade terms electronically on email. Jim Monas was kind of working some of the phones, too, to kind of feel out other teams. Russ was assigned some other teams, and Doug would be in contact with other teams. And Doug Whaley was telling me the reason he does that is so you don't cross your lines and mix information, because that can get you in some real trouble. You tell the wrong information to the wrong team, and then the team you told the information about sore at you, and then you've compromised your open lines of communication. So it sounded like Doug had a handful of teams, Jim Monas had a handful of teams, and Russ had a handful of teams to kind of keep in touch with and feel each other out to see which way some teams might be leaning with their respective picks. And then even Doug Marrone, towards the end of the draft, he started penciling down roster numbers, because he saw who they had drafted already, and he basically said to the guys at the head table, okay, I need two safeties, I need no running backs, you know, I need one guard.
Yeah.
And he kind of laid out the position groupings. So as they started getting ready with the undrafted free agents to make phone calls at the end of the draft, they knew what their numbers had to be and where.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, you and I made note of the fact that by the end of the draft on Saturday, if you go back to the end of last year's draft, the 2013 draft, the Bills, under Doug Whaley, essentially, have made eight trades involving picks and or players in a league where trades aren't that common. What does that tell you about Doug Whaley and his vision for that job?
Well, it's a lesson that he learned from the late Bill Nunn, who just passed this past week. I was talking to him and to Kelvin Fisher about Bill Nunn, who was a longtime personnel man with the Steelers and really had a tight connection with a lot of the black colleges, and actually set up an all-star game for the black college players back in the day. And so that was an in that the Steelers wanted to take advantage of, and they hired him as a personnel man. And he really was basically a mentor for a ton of Pittsburgh personnel men that came through the pipeline probably over the better part of the last 20, 30 years. And he said the number one lesson I learned from him was don't be afraid to make a deal. If it sounds like it's a balanced deal and equitable for both sides, don't be afraid to pull the trigger, especially if you believe in the commodity that you're getting, be it a player or a pick. So I think Doug took that to heart, and maybe he was channeling a little of Bill Nunn this weekend when he was the trigger man here for the Bills.
Well, it sounds like it was pretty fun in there, Chris. We appreciate you coming on tonight to talk about it, and I advise our listeners, you can read about it too, Chris Brown's On the Clock feature, Whaley's Decisive Deal-Making. It's up there along with the video, On the Clock. Chris, thanks very much for coming on the air tonight to talk with us about it.
Always a pleasure, Murph.
Chris Brown, lead journalist, Bills Insider at BuffaloBills.com. Whaley's Decisive Deal-Making, the fourth and final installment of his On the Clock series, sponsored by Dunn Tire. And the video piece is outstanding. Bills Focus inside Buffalo's draft room. That's been up for about 24 hours now. It comes with a highest recommendation. Very dramatic. Pretty cool stuff. Check it out at BuffaloBills.com. We're going to take a phone call or two here if you had any thoughts on that or the Bills draft or where the team is at right now. 803-0550 is the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's go to a call from San Francisco. Yes, who's this, please?
Oh, this is Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. Lost your name. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. Hey, John, you know, I wanted to get some feedback from you on the undrafted free agents. I've seen the nine that the Bills picked up. But what about the tight end? I was really hoping that we'll take a chance on him, Colt Lierla.
Lierla,
from,
yeah.
Oregon.
Yep.
Well, I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Is there any chance that we still pick him up, or what does that look like?
I doubt that, you know, at this late stage now. I mean, they only signed nine undrafted free agents. They didn't have a lot of roster spots, the Bills did not, this year for undrafted free agents, which I think says something about the strength of the roster. But you know the backstory on Colt Lierla, right? I mean, the guy has been in serious trouble. I'm looking it up now. A guilty plea on December 27th last year for possession of cocaine. I mean, he's had trouble. Arrested in October, police discovered a white powdery substance inside a car. His license was suspended in October after four driving tickets in the previous 24 months. They've taken risks on some players. This one looks like it might be too much for them to absorb. And, by the way, nobody else has signed Colt Lierla, too, which tells you that maybe the problems persist for him out there in Oregon. It's unfortunate. Nobody has signed him yet, which would indicate that, you know, they've done their homework and they know how productive he might be able to be in the NFL. But who wants to take that chance? It's almost tragic when you think of a guy with that much ability and may not get a chance in the NFL. All right, we'll take a break, and when we return, we're going to talk more about this draft and about number one draft pick Sammy Watkins. We're going to go all the way back to Watkins' freshman year in high school at South Fort Myers High School in Florida. His freshman coach that year was one of the all-time great high school coaches in Florida, Joe Hampton. He coached Sammy Watkins down there, and he actually was in the draft room, the green room at Radio City last Thursday night when Sammy Watkins heard his name called. We will be live on the line with Joe Hampton when we return. It is the John Murphy Show. It is presented by NOCO. It is live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Less than a week removed from the first round of the NFL draft last Thursday night when the Buffalo Bills made the big move up and drafted Sammy Watkins in the first round. Sammy Watkins from Clemson University. And a product of South Fort Myers High School on the Gulf Coast of Florida. At the draft in New York, he brought along one of his football coaches, his freshman football coach from South Fort Myers High School, Joe Hampton. Joe Hampton is a Hall of Fame coach in Florida, and he joins us live on the line right now. Joe, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Glad to do it.
Well, were you surprised when Sammy invited you to come to New York to Radio City with him last week?
Yeah, really, you know, I wasn't expecting it, and you know, when he called me sometimes in probably the end of March, you know, and he and I don't talk a lot over the phone, you know, we text maybe some, but I know his situation, that's just the way he is, you know. But yeah, I was surprised and honored that he called and asked.
Tell us about your relationship with Sammy, Joe. You had him. You were the freshman high school football coach at South Fort Myers, but you were around the program in his all four of his years there at the high school, correct?
Right.
And
I had gone up after this school. I had been the head coach at another high school, and had retired from the football, and one of my former players got the head job, and. He talked me into coming back up there and to help him. I said, well, I'll come and do the ninth grade for you, but I'm not going to do Saturday and Sunday stuff. But that's how I got involved with him and just coaching the ninth grade.
So tell me your first look at Sammy Watkins when he comes in before his, you know, he's an eighth grader. He's probably 13, maybe even 12 years old going into ninth grade down there in South Fort Myers. What did you think when you first saw him on the football field?
Well, I knew that I had those kids come over when they were, you know, that before they went into high school. I started
you know, had the skill kids come that summer. You know, are you starting looking for your quarterback or who's the best, you know, who's the best athletes, and you kind of just start feeling them out. And I could tell, like, you know, pretty quick he was, you know, had a lot of skill at that point in time. And he was, I think his 40 at that time, probably about 4'8", 4'75", something like that.
Wow.
But I could tell, and you know, I had another kid that was coming that was a quarterback also. So I had already kind of, through the process of summer, narrowed it down to those two, and you know, I was just going to play both of them, and they both of them played defense too. So you know, you had a good athlete there.
And I guess Sammy played some defensive back along with alternating snaps at quarterback with the other kid, huh?
We played both of them. You know, I'm of this old philosophy. I'm gonna put my best athletes on the field. I don't give offense or defense. You know, they're gonna play. And my quarterbacks have always played defense. You know, because I'm not gonna have my best athlete standing on the side of me, and you know, when the other team's out there on the field, you know, scoring.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We're on the line with Joe Hampton, who coached Sammy Watkins in high school. He was the freshman coach at South Fort Myers High School in Florida. I guess I read this. Sammy started actually one varsity game as a freshman. He must have got better as the season went along, huh?
Yeah, you know, our season, you know, we played eight games. So, and I always tried to play them early. I mean, you know, straight through. So those kids could be brought up. You know, I think there's about three of them they took up to the varsity after our season was over. We had another kid that came in with him that was a freshman also, and he was actually the quarterback with the varsity team, Dallas Crawford. And so, you know, Sammy, we had been keeping all the freshmen with me, but this particular one, they needed a quarterback up there, and I was glad to keep Sammy, and I said, y'all can have him. So it all worked out, and then he started up there, you know, and they looked at him a little bit at quarterback at, you know, the next spring, and, you know, with him, Dallas and things, but I could see one of the other kids, the guy was coaching the varsity receivers and stuff, and I told his dad and him, I said, look, Coach Dixon will take care of him. Don't, you know, he'll make the decision, put him in the right place. You know, so they're all kind of just trying to decide, well, is he a better quarterback than the other, you know, kid that's there, you know, how they go back and forth. They had been kind of playing, that had always been like the Pop Warner stuff, you know.
Right.
You know? So, and then that spring, they started looking at him at Wild out there, and Dallas could throw the ball very well. And, you know, so it was a good complementary for both of them.
Yeah.
And I think that was what, you know, for Sammy's sake, you know, he was very fortunate. He had a quarterback in high school that can throw him the football.
Sure.
And vice versa, you know, and you just don't have that a lot in high school, not for 3 years anyway.
Right. Coach, by the time Sammy was a senior, I watched, there was video of a game from December 2010, Sammy's senior year, South Fort Myers against Bradenton Southeast. And I saw him on a fake punt catch a 69-yard touchdown pass, and then he had a 60-yard punt return for a touchdown and a big come-from-behind win. By the time he was a senior, he was making plays all over the field in all kind of ways, it seems, down there, huh?
Well, he had, you know, you watched him through the year, and, of course, there were a couple of games he was kind of nicked up a little bit and stuff, and they wasn't playing him quite as much on defense. You could see against the good competition, he rose to the occasion. And, you know, that particular game you're speaking of, I was standing down in the end zone with Coach Jeff Scott
receiver coach from Clemson.
Uh-huh.
Down, he was down there recruiting that night, you know, I mean, to watch him play. And, I mean, it was like a highlight show, you know. And,
yeah.
And I know Coach Beckley from Southeast. Of course, they had a great defensive back that went on to Florida. And, you know, they were matching up, and it was a, you know, it was just a great competition between them two. But toward that end of that game, after he had that fake punt and he just blew by him, you know, and the week before he did the same thing against Naples. Caught a pass and, you know, he's gone. But Coach Beckley, you know, he kicked it out of bounds the first time. And they had an illegal procedure, and then he had a punt again, and the other one took a bad bounce, didn't get out of bounds, and he caught it, and then it was history then.
Wow. That's amazing. You know, one thing about that his career there, and I guess his moving to Clemson, you'd mentioned Jeff Scott. It seems like it was might have been your relationship with Jeff Scott, the receivers coach at Clemson. His father, the relationship you had with him sort of got Sammy to Clemson. Is that accurate to say?
Well, his dad, Brad, and I have known each other 30 years, ever since he was a high school coach down here in a community, and I knew him when he went on to Florida State, and we were took our kids to FCA camp in North Carolina in the summer, and but I knew him when at South Carolina, so we had kept in ties, and then when he had this area again to come down here to recruit, and you know, when I told him when we came by that that spring, I said, look, there's a ninth grade. I got two ninth graders here that you need to keep an eye on that's going to be good athletes.
Huh.
And he started talking and started building that relationship thing. The other kid would have been a great football player too, but he ended up going baseball and signed. I think he's like the 60th pick with Minnesota, but that's where it started. I mean, you know, and I told Florida State the same thing, you know, anybody is, because I'm a Florida State graduate, but they didn't. That's when they had that changeover to coaches, and they didn't come by that spring, and they just kind of got lost in the shuffle, you know. And then Coach Scott and them got him, got him, one of the assistant coaches, Coach Dixon, to come to a camp up there in the summer. And when Sammy saw the university, plus that's when they really saw his skills going into senior year.
Yeah.
That he was something special.
Hey, Coach. Coach, there have been some great players, obviously, coming out of the state of Florida, and even in Southwest Florida, you know, Deion Sanders, Edgerrin James. Is Sammy Watkins like that caliber of player, do you think, as he moves into his NFL career?
Well, I think so. Now, you know, it's just like all those guys. You know, I played against Edgerrin and coached against Deion both. And Deion and I is good friends. I was glad to see him there at the draft. We got to share a little bit of time there. But, you know, all of the, you know, it's like when they leave here, the high school, or, you know, you don't predict, you know, how are they going to do in college? Well, they all did extremely well. And I think it's the attributes that they applied in college, they just turned around and did the same thing when they became professionals. And I look for Sammy to do the same thing. You know, I think he's worked hard. He's got the skills. He puts himself into it mentally. You know, I had no clue, the idea that, you know, his freshman year at Clemson with that big transition from high school to the college, you know, that he would have that freshman year like he had. But that was all a tribute to him getting in there and learning stuff mentally. You know, that aspect of the game, I think that's where he's ahead of a lot of other people. And then his skills, you know, his speed and all that stuff that he had worked on. I mean, it just didn't happen. He worked at it and running track and doing stuff that he would to make him a better player. And that's what he's his forte, that he's done the things to make himself better, whatever that may be.
Well, I'm sure you played a large role in that, Coach. We thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about Sammy Watkins. Hope we get a chance to talk again sometime. Thanks.
Well, I hope so, and look forward to coming up there and seeing him play.
Come on up. Thanks, Coach. Joe Hampton, he's a Hall of Fame coach in the state of Florida. He coached Sammy Watkins. It's freshman football at South Fort Myers High School in Florida, and he was there in the green room at Radio City Music Hall last Thursday night when Sammy Watkins put on that Bills cap. We'll take a break. Come back with more. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Coach Joe Hampton from South Fort Myers High School, freshman coach. He still is an assistant coach there. Hall of Fame coach in the state of Florida. Can you imagine the high school football going on down there? Guys like Sammy Watkins running around. And I was thinking during the interview, and Coach Hampton was gracious enough to do it with us, that somebody might be driving around listening to the show thinking, yeah, Sammy Watkins, good, Bills first-round draft pick. Why do I care what his high school, his freshman high school football coach thinks? Well, think about this. Sammy Watkins is just about 3 years plus removed from high school football. It's not that long ago. So the stories Coach Hampton was telling about the game against Bradenton Southeast and scoring on a 69-yard punt return and a fake punt, that just happened in his life. I mean, that was just a little while ago, Jay, right? Back me up on this, Jay.
Yeah.
It's relevant because it just happened 3 years ago.
3 years ago, and then and he alluded to it, making that transition, that jump from his senior year in high school to his freshman year. He never imagined it would play out that way.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And that just shows the work that he puts into it.
Yeah.
And now here it is again. You make a jump to another level. Now he's making a jump to another level. And everything we've heard about him is that he's going to work hard and make himself or better himself in those ways, whether it be in the weight room or off the field. I mean, that's great.
Yeah. We are surrounded by rookies here at One Bills Drive this week, including Sammy Watkins. And earlier today, we heard from Cyrus Kwanjo, the Bills' second-round draft pick. They had a news conference. And Kwanjo, second-round pick, you know his story from Alabama, a native of Cameroon in Africa, played soccer growing up. He was asked about the Bills' 14-year streak without a playoff appearance. He was asked, Cyrus Kwanjo was asked, what's the deal with that streak and why does he think that has taken place here?
I don't know why we haven't been a winning team, but I'm a winner. That's what I do. So I come here with the intention to win games. No matter what, I don't care. I want to win, and I'm going to do what I have to do to win, whether it's motivate whoever, whatever. If I see anything, you know, not right, or see something missing in the team, to become characteristics missing as of a winning team. Because I've been to two winning programs. I lost about seven games in my life. I know what a winning program looks like, and I know the trends. I seen trends in a winning program, and I know if I see something that's a little bit off, you know, I'd say something. But, I mean, I have high hopes for this team, you know. I believe in this team. I believe in these men, you know. I see nothing but winners around me. I came here, I saw the attitude on the team, and these guys, they I loved it, you know. It's like everybody's willing to win. Everybody's willing to, you know, willing to have good plays and to work from what I've seen so far in one day.
Quite an impression after one day for young Cyrus Kwanjo.
Doesn't sound like a rookie, does it?
He does not. A couple of things he said in there. Right off the bat, I love the fact when he answered the question by saying, I don't know why we have not been winning, have not been a winning team. Now, Cyrus Kwanjo just arrived on the scene like last night, today, and he's already looking at we. I think that's significant. I love the fact when he said, I'm going to win no matter what, whether it's motivating someone else or see something missing. I've been in two winning programs. How about this? He was at DeMatha High School outside Washington, D.C., and then, of course, he played you know, down at Alabama. He said, I've lost about seven games in my life. That's the kind of guy you need if you're going to change culture. And I think the point that was made, I think Jim Monos made it, the Bills' director of personnel on Saturday, with some of the draft picks. He said, we're trying to get guys in here who have been around winning programs. Kwanjo at Alabama. Watkins was around for Clemson's good performances. Ross Cockrell We talked with him a little bit today. You know, Duke had a couple of outstanding years when he was there. Preston Brown at Louisville. They're trying to get players from winning programs here and people who know how to win. It's all good. I know. It's all good after the draft. Everybody's happy. 31 other NFL cities. Everybody's happy with their draft picks. Love what they're saying as they show up to get to work. And it doesn't mean much because what really matters is what happens on the field. But this could be a special draft class, I believe, for the Bills, led by Sammy Watkins. Could be a very special draft class, augmented today by the seven undrafted free agents who are signed and the two others who have agreed to terms. We're going to hear from more of these guys as the week goes along. We do want to alert you that tomorrow night, Sal Capaccio will be hosting back at our flagship studios, a day off for myself and Jay Harris, and we'll be back here on Thursday night to resume introduction to some of these players, some of these draft picks, some of these undrafted free agents that the Bills have brought in this week as we lead up to the rookie minicamp, which is coming up Saturday, Sunday, and Monday this week. So that'll do it for us tonight. Sal Capaccio will be on the air tomorrow night with the show. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight is Pete Cargis. Our producer is Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Sal Capaccio tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.